This is Rusty Tanton.
And Amber Ray.
And you're listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network, the show focused on all things Atlanta and sometimes elsewhere.
It's August 11th, and Rusty and I are here in downtown Augusta with Eric Montgomery, the Executive Director of Historic Augusta. So, just to start out, can you give us a little background about what Historic Augusta does?
Sure. Historic Augusta is a nonprofit organization founded in 1965. We're membership-based, and our purpose is to preserve the historic buildings and sites of Augusta and Richmond County. And our what that means is that we deal with historic buildings in whatever way that we can to bring about their preservation and restoration if the need is there. So we are a pretty active organization. We have a board of about 50 to 60 people. We have a membership of about 1,500 people and a staff of 3 full-time and right now 3 part-time.
And what is your involvement been? How long have you been involved with Historic Augusta?
I came to Historic Augusta when I came to Augusta in 1989. I came here to take the job as executive director. So I've been here for 18 years.
And did you have experience with historic preservation before coming here?
That's correct. My degree is in history with an emphasis in historic preservation. And what I've done since college was work in various historic preservation jobs. First as a planning person in a regional planning agency, and then as an executive director of a couple of different organizations in Southwest Georgia, and then as a consultant based out of Savannah, and then I came here in 89 as executive director of Historic Augusta.
So you've been here for a while, so what has changed and or not changed about the attitude towards historic preservation in Augusta in the time you've been here?
Well, I feel like we've made a lot of progress. One of the first things that we tackled when I got here was to adopt the Main Street program, which is a downtown revitalization program that was started by the National Trust back around 1980. And it had not been implemented in Augusta, and we started that program with in partnership with the city. And I think that it's made a real difference in the downtown to bring about revitalization, especially on Broad Street. But other things that we've done, Augusta had a historic preservation ordinance that was adopted by the city, I believe, in 1970, but it was very limited in its scope. It was basically limited to about 3 blocks of historic buildings along Telfair Street. So we revised the actual ordinance to comply with the Georgia state enabling legislation for historic, to establish historic districts and historic commissions. And then we're able to get larger areas under protection of the city's historic preservation ordinance, which I believe they adopted that ordinance finally in 1992. And the first district was an African-American district called Bethlehem, which is no longer a district. That's an unfortunate and kind of a long discussion in and of itself. But then the second one was the Somerville neighborhood. It became a local historic district, and then downtown, and then finally, most recently, the Old Town area. So there's still some neighborhoods that aren't really protected, but those are some of the main ones. So I'm proud of that. And of course, that's kind of the controversial thing about historic preservation is when you start telling people what they can and cannot do.
Right.
But You know, there's a lot of times when you tell people they can't tear something down or do something that would be not in keeping with the historic integrity of a neighborhood. And maybe it's controversial at the time, but in hindsight, often people look back and they say, thank goodness we did that, because it needed to be preserved.
So when you say that the neighborhoods are protected, what exactly does that entail? Is it just not tearing things down, or are there other components?
Well, when a historic preservation ordinance is enacted in a city in Georgia, and really most any state, but we comply with Georgia's enabling legislation on this. But when a historic district is established, that means that any changes or alterations have to come before a historic preservation commission, which is appointed by the Augusta City Commission. And so that means that's exterior alterations. It doesn't deal with interior. So if you are going to change out your windows or put on a new roof that is not exactly like the old one, or if you are want to rebuild your porch in a different way, change the siding or anything like that, it has to come before the Preservation Commission. And of course, worst case scenario, if you are proposing to tear a building down that's inside the boundary of a designated area, that has to be approved by the Preservation Commission. So it gives some, I guess what it does is just give a process where everybody has to think about it before changes are made that will have a detrimental effect on a historic district. Or the effect may be a positive effect. I mean, mm-hmm. there are buildings that have been torn down that everybody's delighted to see that they are gone. Mm-hmm. Or maybe what's put back is an improvement, vast improvement over what was there. So it's really no different than subdivision regulations in a new development, which mm-hmm. most people wouldn't dream of buying in a new development if there weren't some kind of regulations to keep people from building things that brought their property value down, but you don't have that in existing historic neighborhoods.
One thing that happened a few years ago, you may have heard about this because it did make the national news. It's closer to our neck of the woods in DeKalb County, which is just outside of Atlanta. Avondale Estates, there was a resident there who wanted to put some additions onto his house, and he brought it up before a historic commission, and they denied his changes. But so what he ended up doing in protest was painting his house purple with yellow polka dots to sort of bring attention to the news story. Have you ever encountered anything like that around
here? Sure, that happens. And in fact, well, first of all, let me say, in Augusta and in mm-hmm. any community, I would think, including Avondale mm-hmm. Estates, that adopted their historic preservation ordinance under the existing enabling legislation, mm-hmm. you cannot regulate paint color. Mm-hmm. And that's something, I mean, if a property owner wants to come in and ask for advice on that, they can get that advice. But the Preservation Commission does not make they don't pass off on the paint color whatsoever. Mm-hmm. That's not their role. That's specifically specified in the ordinance. I do know about another case. If you had what in effect is a Historic Preservation Commission in a Georgia community, it predated that state enabling legislation, mm-hmm. that you could, in those old ordinances, you could control paint color. And they do that in Savannah, still do it in Savannah, because they're what's called grandfathered in. Mm-hmm. As far as I know, they still do it in Savannah. I moved here from Savannah, so this was going on at the time. But there was a fellow who it was an issue of his paint color, and he wanted to paint it a certain scheme, and the Preservation Commission down there, I don't think they call it Preservation Commission, but whatever the equivalent of that was, denied it. And so but he did it anyway. I mean, so it went through the courts and so forth, and then he painted these obnoxious-looking panels that he put in the windows with these antebellum ladies with hoop skirts on and all that. It was the big news, but I just got a chuckle out of it because I knew that that was only temporary, mm-hmm. Either because he would sell it or he would eventually die, and somebody would bring it back into compliance. But that was a good exercise for me to watch, mm-hmm. simply because to me it's not worth getting into a fight over mm-hmm. paint color. And the interesting thing, it's interesting you should bring that up. That's what always comes up. Mm-hmm. That comes up more than anything else. And we don't even regulate it in Augusta. Mm-hmm. That is not part of the ordinance. So ours, I think, has been overall pretty successful. There have been some issues, you know, like where a driveway goes. And, you know, that's all important for the Preservation Commission to deal with all of that. But the overall goal of it is to preserve historic buildings, and that's a good thing, in my opinion. So, but, you know, here I am talking about this. Historic Augusta does not do that. That is not our role. We're in an advisory role when needed on that. We do not regulate the Historic Preservation Commission. The reason I guess I brought it up is because when it was implemented, mm-hmm. we did take on that as a need for the city that we helped bring back. So.
What have been some of the greatest historic preservation success stories in Augusta in your time here?
You know, there have been a lot. I guess the Wilson, the Boyhood Home President Woodrow Wilson, is my own favorite success story. It was a florist and beauty parlor, and it was for sale at public auction, and Historic Augusta was able to purchase it, and it took us 10 years, but we restored it, and now it's a really an exemplary house museum. So I am particularly personally pleased about that. There are other things, you know, that have just things that come to mind maybe that are fairly recent. The Houghton School, for instance. Mm-hmm. Our role in that was that it was a school, and Craig Elementary and Houghton Elementary were consolidated and put in Craig Elementary that was remodeled and expanded. So that left that building vacant. Well, they found a new buyer, which was a developer in, I think he was in Atlanta, our group that was in Atlanta, and they were going to come in and do some very upscale residential development in Houghton School. And everybody was happy about it. The neighborhood was happy. Everybody was happy. We were involved in it. I was helping them with the tax credits. But in the meantime, they assigned us a preservation easement because there are that's a way to protect the building in perpetuity. But there are also some tax benefits to the property owner for donating that. So it's a great tool. In that particular case, though, they drug their feet for a long time and never went through with the rehab. And finally, they changed their approach, and they were going to turn it into residential, but it went from being very high-end residential to very low-end residential.
I read about that. Like, there were some meetings, and the neighbors were conflicted about it. I remember reading about that.
Well, the neighbors were somewhat, and I don't know about many neighbors that were conflicted, but the neighbors were pretty much solidly against it.
Okay, yeah.
And their reasoning was that that's in Old Town. Old Town is trying to make a comeback, and they already have more than their share of low-income housing, mm-hmm. and they just didn't want more of it. They didn't want, because the way that was set up, it would be subsidized, and you know, they just felt like it would be like another housing project in the middle, right in the heart of the neighborhood. So one of the things that is part of that easement that they assigned to us is a right of first refusal, which essentially means that when the owner of the property that an easement is on gets ready to sell it, they have to come to the easement holder, which in this case was Historic Augusta, and offer it to us at the same price. Mm-hmm. We have the right to refuse the sale of that property. Well, we hardly ever would exercise that, but in this case, it seemed like the only way out. It seemed so we went to we talked to all the interested parties, including the neighborhood and the Downtown Development Authority, and said, look, you know, they've got to sell it to us if we can come up with the exact same money that they're selling it to this other entity for. So if we can come up with the money, if somebody's got the money, we don't have the money, but if somebody's got the money and they'll back us, we can do a transaction where we force them to close, we sell it to us, 5 seconds later we sell it to the next entity, mm-hmm. and we still have the easement is in perpetuity, so this ostensibly could happen again down the road. So it was all set up. Clay Boardman came out and said he would be the end purchaser. So we bought it from them using our right of first, from the owner, the existing owner, using our right of first refusal. Immediately sold it to the Downtown Development Authority, who then provided financing, partial financing, to make the deal work, and then immediately sold it to Clay Boardman. And he invested quite a bit of money to clean it up and stabilize it. The roof was leaking very badly, and the floors were buckling. It was really getting bad. And so time went on, and there's a group called Heritage Academy who started out down in Old Town, and their purpose is to serve low and moderate income families who, not necessarily that live in Old Town, but that I think a lot of their clientele live in that vicinity. They started out down there, and they were temporarily up in the old Curtis Baptist High School, but they couldn't stay there forever. So somehow that all got put together, and they're about to open in the next couple of weeks. That the place sold it to them. We waived our right of first refusal on that sale. It's rehab. It's almost completed, and it's going to be a school again. And there's no better use for a historic building than its original use. So that's a great success story. That's just, you know, that's one. There's a lot of the Wilson House, Halton School, two good examples. A couple of other ones over on Broad Street, we were able to buy two buildings that were identical buildings in a row of six identical buildings. One was a pawn shop, and the other, I'm not sure what the other one was. I think it had been vacant for a while. They were both in estates. One was a kind of a normal estate, a little bit complicated, but not too bad. The other one was in a very complicated estate, 13 different heirs, not necessarily related to each other. And in fact, one of the heirs was the woman who last owned the building left a portion of her estate to her maid. The maid had a son the maid died about, you know, shortly after the lady that left that was leaving the building died. And so the lady had one son who was her sole heir. So, of course, he was to get her portion. But nobody could find him because he was now a she and had disappeared into, the last anybody heard was in Rochester, New York. But they weren't sure where he was. They couldn't find him. It was a challenge to get all of the 13 heirs to all agree and sign on the dotted line. So what we were able to do with that one is we could go ahead and wait. I mean, most investors are not going to wait a year to work something out. They'll just move on to something else. But we were able to wait until we could work all those details out and get all the heirs to agree and to sign off. And I think what they finally did to the heir of the former maid of the lady was just put his portion in in escrow, and as far as I know, it's still in escrow. I don't know if he ever collected it or not, but that enabled us to close on that property. And once we closed on both of those, then our challenge was to find someone who would enhance what was going on in the downtown revitalization. So those two buildings are now very viable. They still belong to the people that we sold them to. One of them is now the Soul Bar, which is considered a very great spot downtown, and was a real helpful thing to get the ball rolling for everything.
That opened when I was in high school, and that was one of the first places that sort of was starting downtown to
pick back up
because it was in the early 90s. I felt like that started to really sort of turn
around. The Artist Row, we were working on that too, and but Coco came down and opened Soul Bar, and then we sold the other one to Molly. At the time, she was Molly Dozier, Mary Pauline Gallery, which is right next to the Soul Bar, and that's a real upscale art gallery. So that's another great success story that we're happy with.
So how do you go about finding people who will purchase these properties and enhance the downtown revitalization?
Well, I don't know. Probably word of mouth is the best thing. Somebody's looking for an opportunity. We have advertised buildings that we're working with on the websites. There's a historic properties website that we've used. There's also the Georgia Trust website. Put it on our own website, but obviously we wouldn't get as much traffic as some of the larger ones. And just find someone who understands rehab and restoration, and it's not easy. A lot of the success stories come from our own members. Obviously, the people who are affiliated with Historic Augusta are interested in historic preservation. So just the other day, one of our buildings on our endangered properties list this past year is known as the Stovall Barnes House up on Green Street. It had been, when it was built in 1860, it was a single family house, very prominent family. Future ambassador to Switzerland grew up there. Then the next family, the guy was the congressman from this district. But like a lot of houses downtown over the years, it started to decline. It became kind of a hotel, and then eventually it became just kind of most recently it was mostly inhabited by vagrants and homeless folks. But, this is a long story, but it had gotten into a financial impossibility that nobody was going to pay for what somebody owed the bank.
Yeah.
But how do I shorten this to a soundbite? It got foreclosed on.
Mm-hmm.
The foreclosure has something to do with the FBI, I understand. And
was there a mortgage?
But anyway, sounds like that might be. But in any case, I knew that there were a couple of my trustees who really were interested and that might buy it. So I talked to the banker who held it. He said, well, as a matter of fact, we just got an appraisal. We know we can't sell it for what we've got in it. We're going to have to take a loss. Yes, I will sell it to someone if they will pay me X number of dollars, which was considerably less than they had been saying before. I called immediately to my trustee who said he wanted to buy it, who had been interested before. He said, tell him I'll take it. I'll have him a contract by the end of the day. And and so that worked out. Well, that was great news because that's the kind of building. I mean, sitting there vacant, it was wide open.
Mm-hmm.
Even the homeless people were still in it. This particular man, and he actually got together with two other of our trustees who were interested in it. But all three of these guys understand the preservation standards and the importance of this house. I mean, it was absolutely the perfect thing. And we're not in the title, it was totally a private transaction between the bank and interested buyers, but I feel like we brought that, we made that happen because we had information early on, and otherwise it might have gone to somebody who would have continued on with the same old, you know, crummy, low rent kind of apartments. Mm-hmm. But so, you know, that's the kind of thing that I'm thrilled when we can make it happen. None of this stuff is easy.
Yeah.
And none of it is, you know, there's no cookie cutter approach. You can't, every building has its own particular issues with the restoration, issues with the ownership, issues with, location, saleability, marketability, use, zoning, you know, so there's no easy answer to any of this. If it was easy, we wouldn't have to be involved, and which is best case scenario. If we don't have to be involved, that's great.
One particular issue we encounter in Atlanta sometimes in some of the historic neighborhoods is there's a couple of, well, one developer in particular I'm thinking of that will buy properties that are historic schools and other places and just sit on them and let them decay until they're basically to a point where they're not able to be restored. And at that point, they can tear it down and build something else because it gets condemned or whatever else.
Demolition by neglect.
Yeah. And do you encounter that here? And if so, how do people deal with it?
Well, that's essentially what happened at the Haughton School.
Yeah.
I mean, the Haughton School was not in great shape when the Board of Education sold it to that group. But I can't remember, maybe 5 years. The worst thing for any historic building is for it to be vacant.
Mm-hmm.
And because, I mean, the deterioration accelerates unbelievably fast. And, of course, if it's vacant, it's a target for vandals and things like that. We do have, on our endangered properties list, we have a school right down the street here on Telfair Street, the old Davidson School.
And they won't sell that. Well,
horrific condition when they let, you know, when they built the new school, which all my children go to or have been to, it was already in horrible condition.
Yeah.
But now, you know, it's just incredibly derelict. Maybe it's too late for that. I don't know, but we've tried to make some inroads with the Board of Education, and I'm very hopeful now that we have a new superintendent that maybe we can get his attention. Because, you know, if they're not going to do something with it, mm-hmm. sell it to somebody that will.
Right.
Take the money and use it for something else. At the very least, you know, mothball it so that it doesn't get any worse, even if you think down the road, which is what we've heard. I mean, down the road, we want to put an elementary magnet school there. Well, that's fine, but, you know, don't let it get in any worse condition than it is. But if that's the case in Atlanta, I'm sorry, y'all probably have a whole lot more schools like that than we do. But we have several now that are kind of on our watch list. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, to be fair, it's kind of a two-sided coin. Richmond County schools have done a good job of rehabbing a lot of their existing schools.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't complain about it. Monticello School, we gave them an award last year. They've done a fabulous job. They did a fabulous job with that. They've done a very admirable job in keeping up Richmond Academy.
Mm-hmm.
Tubman School, they've done a lot of work on. Lamar, they've done a little bit on. C.T. Walker. I tell you, Monticello is the creme de la creme. I mean, that is really, really did a good job on that one. My wife did work at Monticello, and now this year she's going to work at C.T. Walker, so I looked it around real well, and I'm real proud of what they did, but it's not nearly the quality that they did at Monticello. And I credit the former principal at Monticello. She stayed on top of them, and she was involved in everything. But there's some more, you know, like the Martha Lester School up on Broad Street is one that they're actually using that some, and I don't think it's in danger, in imminent danger, but we need to watch that. And then Old Sue Reynolds School way out on Wrightsboro Road, you know, we need to, that one, I don't know, I haven't been by there lately, but I know that might need some attention. And maybe some other ones, too. My main focus is on historic schools.
Right.
So there are some schools that may have been built in the 60s and 70s that aren't really on my radar screen. Now, they did recently sell the old William Robinson School. They had been using it for staff support, staff development for a number of years. But they have sold that to Bray Boardman, who's going to turn that into condos, and that's good news because, you know, it's not deteriorated to the point
now, where is that? Because I read about that, but I don't know where
it's on William Street at the corner of Catherine.
Okay.
It's pretty interesting because Bray asked me to find historical information for him about that. There's been a school on that site since, I believe it was 1818.
Wow.
So as soon as, you know, the old Richmond Academy down here on downtown on Telfair was the main school, and the people that lived on the hill back in the early 19th century, you know, said, well, it's too inconvenient to send our children down there. We need a school up here. So they established a branch academy called the Somerville Academy up there. And so the building that's up there now was built in 1927, 8, somewhere along there. With some additions after that, but anyway, it hadn't been allowed to go down much, and they went ahead and sold that, and that's what they need to do. If you're going to use it in the future, hang on to it, but make sure that it doesn't deteriorate.
Yeah.
If you're not, you know, let somebody else do something. And the sad thing about Davidson, the old Davidson School, is that they've had at least two, maybe three, good offers that.
Yeah.
From somebody who would have, but at this point, what we're afraid of is it's so far gone that
it's looking rough.
But after our endangered properties list came out, within a week they had people there putting plywood on the windows, and they put a fence up around it. So if nothing else, maybe it drew some attention to it. Maybe it's not attention they wanted, but
now how do you determine what properties go on your endangered properties list?
Well, that's something we just started last year. We have a what we call a historic properties committee, and basically the committee, based on, you know, their own observations and staff recommendations, and you know, anybody wants to suggest something, goes the way we've done it last year, and we're doing another one that's going to be unveiled on September the 12th this year. We just looked at things that we thought needed to be done, and that we might could bring about some positive change with. The initial list that we considered was bigger than what we actually announced, because some of the things maybe are impossible. You know, we debated a lot last year on, well, this is already in the works, so we're not going to put that on. But now this year we're thinking, well, maybe we should have put that on, because we could at least have drawn attention to it. So the answer is there's no set way. We look at, you know, what is the property, what is its history, what's its architectural significance, what's the circumstances, does it have a chance, what do we accomplish by putting it on the list, what will people think, will people get really, really mad at us, who owns it, would we be better off, would this one work better if we just kind of worked on it behind the scenes, you know, so we kind of go through, again, there's no set answer, you just kind of take what's presented. This year's list, which we can't reveal right now because it'll be announced on September 12th, but it is going to be shorter.
Mm-hmm.
I think our first year we just had a lot to consider, but this year, because some of those things on our last year list still we're trying to work on, but this year it's going to be shorter. And that's not particularly by design. I think it was more the fact that there weren't, you know, we got a lot of the really severely threatened ones last year, and so this year maybe it doesn't have to be as long.
I noticed that some of those properties that were on the list last year, Sibley Mill and the YWCA Natatorium building, are now have plans.
Yeah, most of the, you know, something's happened on just about all of them. Some of them we're still not sure that they're by any means saved. But at least they're on somebody's radar screen. Sibley Mill is under contract. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that will close. Clay Boardman bought it, or has it under contract. 1223 Green Street was sold to someone who's going to actually restore it over the next 2 or 3 years and live in it himself.
Is that one of those houses right near the
right off the expressway?
Okay.
Yeah.
They always looked scary when I was a kid, dilapidated.
Yeah.
I'm glad they could be saved.
And then another one, 1211, which is the Stovall Barnes house I talked about earlier, that one's been saved. The Green Street Presbyterian Church has kind of had a reprieve. They haven't closed, and right at the moment they're not thinking about closing. And the building is, you know, it's got issues, but it's probably all right. So we're happy about all those. The YWCA natatorium and gymnasium, you know, that one's by no means saved, but the present owners, which is the St. Stephen's Ministries, we have met with them, and they're committed to working with us, and we've got a little grant to secure the services of an architect to help us. I mean, the first thing you need, if you're going to restore something like that, you need to know what's wrong with it, what does it need, how much is it going to cost, what's involved in this, you know. And so that's what this study will do. And once we have that, then that'll be a tool that hopefully we can use to raise money. And again, we prefer to be facilitators and handholders rather than, we don't want to own it, we don't want to restore it. And there are other things. There are other difficult things. We've got a mill over on the third level of the canal, which is there's a lot of interest in. I'm optimistic that we can work something out, but it's going to be a real challenge. And as well as all those houses and buildings that we have listed over in that vicinity. You know, one building that we've worked on recently in the last few years is the Union Baptist Church, which is this wonderful Carpenter Gothic church down at the corner of 11th and Green Street. And we did all that before we had our endangered properties list. We would have been a candidate had we done our list earlier. But what happened on that is kind of an interesting story. And again, this goes along with every building is different, every situation is different. But we've been working with them kind of along. They were able to get a state grant, which was not, it probably won't ever happen again. The states quit giving any kind of grants to churches. But anyway, they were able to get a state grant to help them replace their roof, which had pretty much failed. So we helped them. They replaced it with in-kind, with metal press shingles. And so it looked, the roof looked great, but the whole rest of the building was in dire need. So I started, you know, with the roof work and with some other things that people started noticing, it's so noticeable there on Green Street, I started getting questions about it from people. And Tenant Houston, who's on our board, particularly called me and said, "What can I do? You know, what can we do about this?" And so we kind of put our heads together. I said, "You know, the problem is that it's a very elderly congregation with very limited financial resources, with great needs to restore this building, and it's just too much for them. But so if, you know, the thing is, I guess if we raised money, rather than them raising the money for it, maybe people would feel more comfortable if they gave Historic Augusta the money, a more of a known entity than the church, with oversight, with a board that's well-known in the community. But they would need to give us an easement. So in other words, if I'm going to invest money into getting this thing restored, my security is that Historic Augusta holds an easement. Therefore, nothing can change without Historic Augusta's permission. If this congregation ceases to exist, if they all die out, if they just decide to move someday, or even if they sell it, again, if they sell it, the same situation exists like with Halton School. We can either say, fine, we can sell it to them, we're happy with that, new congregation, new whatever, or we can say, nope, we're going to buy it. So we have some assurance that it will not be torn down in the future, or that some inappropriate use would happen with it. So that was agreed on, and we've raised somewhere over $300,000 now. We've done a lot of restoration on it. Right now, it's kind of down to two main things. The windows need to be restored, the stained glass windows, and there's a little parsonage in the back that we're considering trying to get restored too, so that they can rent that out and have a little income to at least pay the basic utility bills and stuff like that. So that, to me, has been another great, great success story that we've, we're proud to have been a part of.
I'm curious how it compares in Augusta to other cities you've worked in as far as getting these historic preservation efforts moving forward, because my impression has always been, I grew up here and I always felt like I always saw so much potential for downtown Augusta and the Hill and those areas, but I just always felt like people in general just didn't care, or, you know, it always just seemed like downtown was just a bunch of empty buildings that, you know, just died in the 70s, and that slowly but surely through the 90s and more so now, it's getting better, but still it just seems to be slow, as if there's like resistance within Augusta. So I'm just curious as if that's a fair perception or how it compares to other places.
Or even what other factors could have contributed to that.
Yeah, because I don't know.
Yeah,
I think it's a typical perception, and I think maybe it's a fair perception. I often say when people say, you know, how bad it looks or there's so many empty buildings, I want to say, look how many buildings are filled, and you should have seen it in 1989 when I got here. I mean, it was, we've made a lot of progress. I also think that Augusta is not unique in America. Every community, every city of comparable size, are smaller or bigger. You know, we all got these malls, and all the downtowns drained out, and all of the cities struggled with what to do with their central business district and their downtown. And it involves the economy. I mean, everywhere is not Atlanta. Atlanta has this incredible economy. Everywhere is not Savannah. They have this huge tourist economy that drives a lot of things. We don't have either one of those. Do we have the potential to have them? Yes, but, you know, I feel like we ought to be thinking about what we need for our city for ourselves, and therefore that will attract the tourists eventually and so forth. There have been a lot of grandiose schemes in Augusta that haven't panned out so well, like the Golf Hall of Fame. But I think it's a fair perception. But I think you just plug along. And the other thing about Augusta is I think people tend to compare Augusta particularly to Savannah and Charleston. And they're really not really comparable in some ways. They are in their age, in a sense. I know we're not nearly as old as Charleston. We're only 3 years younger than Savannah. But they're coastal seaport cities. We're an inland river port city. There's a huge... I challenge you to find any place that's an inland river port city that looks like Charleston or Savannah or Wilmington or, you know, Alexandria or Baltimore. I mean, they're just different. So, number one, let's don't compare ourselves. You know, that's apples and oranges. And the reason we look different and we look... You know, it's harder to see. It's harder to see progress. It's because our historic resources are so spread out. I mean, it's a huge land area, and much bigger, broader, wider than Savannah. which is kind of stuck between two marshes facing the ocean. And Charleston is on a peninsula, you know.
Yeah.
And we just spread in every direction. And we've got lots of great historic buildings, and many, many of them are in decent shape. But the ones that aren't just kind of stick out like a sore thumb. And I think that's not to say that we don't have major challenges that need to be dealt with. I mean, Delaney Walker and Bethlehem neighborhoods are deplorable in a lot of ways, but in some ways they're making progress. I don't agree with all the progress in some situations, but we do have a lot of work to do, but we've done a lot too.
And I think in answer to your comment about do Augustans care about downtown, if you turn up at any Saturday morning market or First Friday celebration or Historic Augusta's Downtown Loft Tour, which takes place the first weekend in May, you can see that Augustans really do care about downtown.
And I was excited to hear about the Loft Tour, and you know, because those are things that I had no idea were going on, and I guess are fairly recent developments. And I think that's great. And I think, so I don't know, maybe part of it is just my perception now because I don't live here anymore. But I got frustrated a lot living here because I did feel like there was so much potential. And you see in cities of sort of comparable size, like Greensboro, North Carolina comes to mind, and other cities where their downtown seems to really be just very vibrant and have picked up and maybe moved a little faster in that.
And probably Greensboro's economy was stronger, for one thing. Sometimes we get compared to Athens. Well, wouldn't we all like to have a University of Georgia just right in the middle of downtown?
Us to Athens.
But well, I hear that sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't know. There are a lot of factors.
Right.
Our government, our racial issues, our suburban flight out to Columbia mm-hmm. County, our school system. We've got a lot of issues. I'm not sure. I don't know that much about Greensboro, really. I mean, I've been there, but I suspect that their issues would be different than ours. And but you're right. I mean, I would say that's a comparable size city. On the other hand, it's twin city, which is Winston-Salem. I would think it has a very strong economy and doesn't have the same issues as we have, but it is not attractive to me.
That's
downtown.
True. I went there one time and I got depressed.
It is. They have torn down so much, and maybe that's because their economy was so strong that, and they didn't have a preservation ethic.
Uh-huh.
They thought they were taking care of everything maybe at Old Salem, and so that's all they needed to do.
Uh-huh.
That happens sometimes too. I mean, in cities, they say, oh, we did the preservation over there. You can do anything you want to anywhere else. In fact, Julia's hometown, Charlotte, I don't think has a stellar record either, but their economy is very strong. So, so sometimes weak economy at least keeps things from being torn down. I'm not saying I advocate that, but it's nice to have a program in place that you're trying to preserve, because you are going to always have conflicts. Progress and preservation. I mean, to me, preservation is progress,
mm-hmm.
but it's not to everybody, so it's inevitable that you're going to have conflicts.
Right. Because some people think of progress and they think of 60s urban renewal type of things.
Yeah.
Do you have any other questions?
Yeah, actually, a couple of years ago, I was involved in what was called a visioning process in Hall County. I recall a little earlier before that, a few years before that, they had something similar in Augusta. Were you involved in that, or did you at least participate in
it? There have been several.
Yeah.
In the past few years.
Yeah.
I've been involved in, probably in some way, I've been mm-hmm. involved in most of them that have gone on.
And the experience I had in Hall County, anyway, is there was a lot of enthusiasm. And they I was actually involved in writing the plan that came out of the meetings, and there was that. But you never really know if those things are actually going to take hold and people are actually going to stick to them or not. Would you say there's been any success with that, or has it not been successful?
There's a lot of enthusiasm for that, but I think the my observation here and anywhere that I've been that got that has gone through some kind of planning process like that is that the failure of the plan is usually can be attributed to the fact that there was a big committee that was formed to develop the plan, but there's no specific responsibility for following up and implementing the plan. Now, usually the plans always have like tasks, and they say, okay, well, this group's going to take that, and this group's going to take that.
Yeah.
But there's nobody that follows up. You usually have a consultant involved.
Yeah.
And so the consultant then goes away, and nobody's really watching and checking on all these
things. I was
working
for a consultant.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I think we've made, you know, a lot of the things have been implemented. There is a group here called Augusta Tomorrow, and they are kind of self-appointed, but follow up on a lot of these issues to make sure that they're implemented. But even they, I mean, they have a staff of one, so
yeah,
I'm not sure. I mean, they have a very influential board that. But that's not their day-to-day job.
Yeah.
So I think a lot has been implemented, but it would be nice if it was more coordinated, more, you know, there was more overall oversight to implement the plans.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of plans, as they say, that are on the shelf.
There are three major ways that you can get involved with historic preservation in Augusta or throughout the state, and one of those is to be more informed. Check out our website at historicaugusta.org. The second way is to join us. Become a member of Historic Augusta. There's membership information on our website. If you live elsewhere in the state, consider joining the Georgia Trust. Their website is georgiatrust.org. And the third way to become involved is to join us in some of our programs. If you're from outside the city and you're traveling through Augusta, stop and visit one of our many historic house museums like the Boyhood Home of President Woodrow Wilson. Or attend one of our events. We have an upcoming event called Walk with the Spirits. It's a tour of Somerville Cemetery. And so on October the 13th and 14th, we'll have people in period costume portraying different notable citizens from Augusta's past, like Joseph Lamar, who was a Supreme Court Justice, or Governor Jenkins, or Catherine Cumming. So that should be a fun new event. It's another way to get involved in preservation.
Somehow all our interviews get back to ghost stories, don't
they? Yeah, they do. How does that happen?
I mean, like the last, I don't know, three or four interviews, because anytime we interview someone who's involved with some sort of historic aspect, somehow ghosts come up at some point. We're not really sure.
We seem to really be into the cemetery aspect these days, because we've got the Walk with the Spirits tour this year. We are assisting the State Historic Preservation Office with the statewide conference on cemetery preservation, which will be
November 1st and 2nd.
In early November. And we also are working with one and probably going to work with, may work with another local cemetery, private cemetery, that just to help them with their financial aspects, to handle their money, and so that they can, you know, go about preserving their cemetery and restoring it. And it seems like a good model. The first one is a cemetery up off Washington Road across from the Augusta National that is just in deplorable condition. But the family has kind of organized itself. But because, you know, it's a lot of, if you form a nonprofit organization, there's a lot of, you know, tax reporting that you have to do, even though you're a nonprofit, and there's fiduciary responsibilities and thank you notes and keeping money in the bank. So what we've done with them is work out this deal where, you know, we kind of do all that for them. They're responsible for it, but people can write their checks to us. Kind of like the Union Baptist Church thing. Write your checks to us. We'll spend the money and help you in any way, but we're not taking responsibility for the restoration of the maintenance. But we'll let you use our resources to run that through. There's another cemetery in South Augusta that we're, that has great needs too, and that may come about with them as well. So, you know, there's all kinds of interesting roles that we've found. Like I said before, there's no cookie cutter approach to preserving our historic resources. So that's what we just try to figure out all these creative ways of doing it and promoting it and keeping it on people's, in their minds so that they think it's important.
Well, how can people find out more about Historic Augusta or get in touch with y'all?
HistoricAugusta.org is our website, and you can write to us at Historic Augusta Incorporated, Post Office Box 37, Augusta, Georgia 30903. Our telephone number is area code 706-724-0436. So that would be the main ways to find us.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
The song you heard in this podcast was Flux by Drop Trio, available only on Magnatune.com.
Thanks for listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network. Visit us at gapodcastnetwork.com. If you have a question, comment, or drunken rant, leave us a voicemail by calling 678-389-9441. Who knows, it might be featured in a podcast. You can also email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com.